Welcome again to Adventure Buds. We still don't have an opening. Doesn't matter that much.
Hey, I got a job. I can get an intro. Maybe this intro... There will be an intro this time. No, it won't, actually, because I was just editing this and get it up, like, tonight.
Maybe we can get one from a certain cat at some point. I don't know. But anyway. So, today's is... kind of special. I think this is the first time we've done a diceless game of any kind on here.
I think we've mentioned one diceless game before. We probably talked about Final Bid during the Fellowship game.
Yep, this one is considerably different because unlike that one, which has like concepts that you're using as your token thing, this one has like almost meters that go up and down. But let's not worry about that until we get into the actual, like, fine detail. This is Golden Sky Stories. It's a very cute little game that's about a town out in the far countryside, nice, rural, idyllic place that happens to have a bunch of transforming animals that exist in the same space, Henge. And they are trying to help the various people in the town, and perhaps some other animals and spirits besides, to solve their problems.
Yeah, I think the best description I heard about this was, like, it's basically a slice of life, the tabletop game.
Its subtitle is a heartwarming RPG, so it very much, you know, has that feel. I played a game of this a long time ago, and when I did, I basically ended up playing as a character that was sort of the surrogate parent of the rest of the Henge crew, who were all very childish and getting into mischief all the time, and I'm playing as the only character that had a high adult stat.
Yeah, weren't you also the surrogate mother in the Persona game when that was going?
Look, it's a
common thing. It's almost like you have a set or something.
I mean, it's not going to help that, you know, this time around I'm going to be picking the option that is closest to what I picked last time for this, but, do you want me to cover, like, besides the idyllic setting, like, some of how the mechanics work? Because this is a very unusual game.
Well, the floor is yours. You're the one that played this, not me.
Fair. So, you've got this rural town. Normal setting is, as you probably have guessed, in Japan. This was originally a Japanese game that was then translated to be available over here, and the official translation has a bunch of extra notes to fill in the gaps for people who might not know, like, all of the various different details and stereotypes that the animals have attached. Like, rabbits apparently have a myth about them that if they are alone for too long, they will die of loneliness. That's weird. Yeah. It doesn't get quite that severe in terms of how it plays out, but they do make note of the fact that this is a thing. And of course note that that's not how rabbits actually work any more than rabbits being obsessed with carrots, which is a Bugs Bunny thing. But, yeah. I make note of that and a couple of other things. There's one that's going to come up with the character that I made, which is kind of a big, weird thing as far as what shows up in Japanese myths form. But what we've got is a very, you know, tiny town. The way that they describe it, which is probably pretty amusing for a lot of people living in rural towns in America, is they have only one train track that goes into town, and one train comes by every hour on the hour, and no more than that. And it's like, you're assuming that we live in a place where there's a train track that works.
You know, I used to live right by train tracks for, like, I want to say 20 plus years of my life. And, no, we never got trains that often at all.
Not here either, really. The closest ones to me are rusted out. I may actually live in a more rural place than the one name town that is given in this place. That's what the town's name actually translates to, they say. I don't have the name right in front of me right now, so let me actually look that up, because I know it's here.
You did remind me, though, that I don't think ever since I moved kind of back close to my old hometown, every time I've gone into town, I don't think I've seen a single train there yet.
Odd.
Which is weird, because the trains are usually there for the factory stuff, and you would think how I work at a factory again now, I would see one eventually. Or it just might be the hours. Who knows? What am I rambling about anyway? Oh yes, you're looking up something.
I mean, we can edit out parts that need to...
I'm not editing out shit!
Oh no!
Anyway, while you're still looking... Oh, I thought I was gonna...
Look, I didn't have the name written down anywhere.
That's okay. We believe you. Anyway.
It doesn't help that this is hard to flip through right now.
That's the fun of PDFs.
Especially unusually formatted ones.
I mean, as long as you can search text for it.
There it is. Hitotsuna. That's literally what it means, so... I just didn't have it in my head. So, it's your standard idyllic surroundings. There's a general store run by an elderly lady who basically knows almost everyone in the town and doesn't give a shit about the fact that you are technically not human when you show up. There's even a description there of sometimes she'll be feeling kind of under the weather and the henge will be asked to help run the shop. That's one of the stories that you can have go off.
Yeah, this entire series is about just a good feeling game.
Yep. There's multiple shrines in the area, several of them to local gods. One of them may be to the fox henge in the group, because that's a thing that you can have happen. There's a couple of ancient houses that are disused. Some of them are said to be haunted. You know, the usual stuff. As a result of that, there's tons of places for people to play and get into trouble, and there's places for kids to get lost and have to be guided back to town by your characters. All the rest of this lovely stuff.
There's a lot to do. I want to point out a specific paragraph, by the way, about the henge that really needs to, it should be the opening paragraph to create a character. You don't have the power to fight. You have just the tiniest bit of magical power. Well, sometimes it can't even be called magic. It's more like the ability to create a truly small opportunity. However, that tiny opportunity can change a person, and changing a person can save them. That's pretty much a good, descriptor of this game.
You find people who are in trouble in a, physical sense or in just some kind of social sense, and you help them out. I probably should have fronted with this, but your powers are literally powered by friendship. All of your abilities are powered by your connections to other people and beings.
It's basically how many games we covered that have that as an actual mechanic. We have Fellowship for that, we have Ryutama for that. Dungeon World, maybe, and our unreleased, never coming out 13th Age episode. Also talked a bit about that.
Well, I mean, all of those, you're dealing with the concept of some kind of a connection or bond that's being counted in, these are things that have happened, these are memories of, and you're kind of pulling on that strand, or you're using dice to determine connections. There are no dice in this game. You're making a story, and the connections that you have to other players, to the town itself, because there's a connection to and from the town that you automatically have it to in this game. And the town considers you to be accepted. What you have, essentially, is every connection that you have to other people or to the town, when you add up all those numbers, you get the amount of wonder that you get at the beginning of each scene. And wonder can be used for your various magical powers. And then, in the other direction, every connection that you have back to you, when you add up all those numbers, then you end up with an amount that is your feelings. And feelings can be used in order to get a better result, because each of your stats, which you have 4 of them, can be used for one particular group of things. And if you have a challenge that comes up, you need to get it above a certain value. So these stats top out at 4 for a henge. And some challenges can get pretty high up there, like 7 or 8. If you want to show a really good impression to someone the first time you meet them, which is important, getting at least a 4 means that you have a connection with them and you thereby have 1 point in that direction towards them. Whereas if you want to really impress them, then you have to get an 8. So how you get this is you pay feelings, and the exact number that you pay in feelings adds on to that stat. And so you can be, like, deciding that you're going to play some kind of a game, like you have a kickball match or something, and that's something that would use your child statistic, which is your statistic for, you know, being a kid or having things that are related to being smaller or being, like, a little mischievous in some ways. That's the stat that you use for playing or for getting what you want, like, by, like, asking for something and being able to pull off being cute, you know, doing the puppy eyes thing. And it's also the stat that you use for when you want to have someone protect you. Meanwhile, the other 3 stats that you have the henge stat, which is used for your various mysterious powers. The more powerful you want it to be, the higher you need to pump that stat at the time. You have your animal stat, which is used for running and hiding. It's used for having a more, like, emotional connection to things. It's used for sensing things better, and it's used for, well, you're not supposed to fight in this game, and it explicitly tells you that if you get in a fight, you actually lose a lot of connection to the town, and it drops back to the default of 2, so don't do that. But if you're fighting by, like, scratching and biting and so forth, then that uses the animal stat. And finally, the adult stat is used for knowing things, like any kind of book knowledge, any kind of, like, practical knowledge, that would be adult. It's also used for holding your feelings close to your heart and not, like, letting people know how you're feeling immediately. It's used for any kind of, like, machine usage, including something that we would think of as simple as calling someone on a phone. You need to actually give that a try using this stat, or it doesn't work. Basically, anything else that would be connected to, like, being a functional adult, or pretending to be one since you're playing as an animal, is using that stat. Also, of note, the adult stat is the only one that you can have at a 0, which is a thing that you can have.
You are very literally baby.
I mean, that is a thing that can happen, and again, you're playing as a character that is an animal that takes a human form, but doesn't necessarily, like, fully encompass that. A lot of henge in stories are often bumbling or have some kind of a minor flaw. Often this is handled in this game with the fact that your appearance as a human is more expensive for you to keep up if you are trying to do so without any tells. If you allow your ears or tail to show, then it reduces the cost, and if you allow both to show, then in the evening or other twilight time, it actually reduces the cost to 0. But you better be among friends and among people who are willing to ignore the fact that you're very obviously, you know, not quite pulling off the human disguise. If you're around out-of-towners, they might get surprised, and if they get surprised hard enough, they might faint.
Oh no.
Or just start running away. There's a number of different things that can happen when you surprise someone. It basically has this list of fight or flight things that go off. Sometimes you want to do that, though. Sometimes someone is being particularly nasty and you just want to give them a quick spook so that they fall over and stop causing problems, but without, like, actually trying to hurt anyone. Again, remember, fights are bad. You are not here for fights. You are here for mischief. You are here for solving problems.
Kind of reminds me, however, you tell him of combat is actually not that big of a part in that game. Like, you can make it sort of, but
yeah,
it's entirely possible to make a campaign where you don't fight anything at all. I mean, aside from
combat is even less of a thing here because the rules for it start out by saying don't do this and then explain, okay, if you absolutely have to, it's literally just an ordinary check. but also it has bad consequences even if you succeed. But yeah. So, out of the set that you can choose to be a fox, a tanuki, a cat, a dog, a rabbit, or a bird. This is the standard set that's in the normal game. And then the additional ones that got added, if I'm remembering right, are a mouse, a pony, a fish.
I remember showing you the horse art. It was like, oh, yeah, that person does look like a horse. That was really cool.
It's impressive, but yeah. A fish is another one who appears as a mermaid when they're in, like, low-key form. And they can actually breathe in air just fine, even when they're in full fish form, because otherwise it would be impossible to play them in many cases.
Wasn't there something about having your fishbowl carried around or something? I don't know.
I honestly can't remember. I didn't look that closely. There was a fourth one that I can't remember, but I swear there was a fourth animal type, and then there was the witch, which is a human being that has Hengate powers. So, there are other options that are available if you get the supplementary book. Neither of us are using those options.
Yeah, there's a book about fairies, all different types of fairies, like, you know, you got your brownies, your gnomes. There's a fantasy one, which has more fantasy races. There's, like, a gelatinous slime.
When you told me about the fairy one, I honestly thought you were talking about Costume Fairy Adventures, because the list was almost identical.
Yep, that's what I said. It's like, hey, is this, like, Costume Fairy Adventures? It isn't, because there's other things, but
we definitely have to do that one, too, by the way.
That's another game you have more familiarity with, anyway.
It's fun. But yeah. So you have that, and whenever you choose what type of Henge you're going to play, that determines your core set of powers, and it tells you some of what you should expect in terms of how you should be acting, how you should be dressing, gives you directions for how to create the rest of your character, and it gives you access to additional powers. But each of those comes with a weakness attached, which is nice and flavorful. Like, I really like how the extra power system works in this.
It's really neat. I love it. They give you more. A lot of it plays into animal stereotypes, and then you get more.
Yep. You play into one of the myths about your particular type of Henge, and it gives you more abilities, but some of them are really funny. Like, my personal favorite is still the one for the Tanuki, where the additional ability that you have that's connected to being a glutton is a little something called stomach worm. And what happens here is the ability you get is you can spend 8 wonder in a scene, and it causes you to let out this rumbling noise when your stomach is empty, which endears other people to you. If you finished a scene without eating anything, and you still haven't eaten within the next scene, you can just make this little rumbling noise, and anyone who is currently connected to you with a protection, affection, or family connection, because connections can be of different types, it's called contents of the connection for some reason, then that increases their connection to you by 1 to a maximum of 4. For sitting there and making this cute little rumble like, oh, I'm hungry. And the downside to it is your weakness is glutton, which means if you don't get a proper meal, you can barely move. So having that rumbling noise probably means that you're not moving around too well. And secondly, if there's food in front of you, you have to stop and eat until you're full or the food's all gone. Even if you have other things that you should be doing. It's a very tanuki thing to do. It's very cute and bumbling and endearing, and I love it. I just love the flavor of that.
I do enjoy that a lot. A number of these weaknesses that you can choose are, like, just characteristics that you're forced to do. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't feel like the game's role-playing for you. It's just, you have to do this, but, you know, you can do it in your own flavor way. It's fine.
Yep.
It's just, you know, It's practically a good suggestion for how to play a character. It's fun.
Yep. So, yeah, getting back to the character creation, I have to do a search. There we go. So, the next thing that you do after you choose your additional powers, and you are limited to only taking maximum of 3 weaknesses, and there are 5 additional powers for each Henge type, so you do have to actually pick. You can't just go, oh, I'm taking the whole buffet. You're not doing it.
You kind of don't want to take all of them either. Some of them are kind of dangerous.
It would get really restrictive, especially the ones that, like, damage your ability to improve connections can be really nasty. But yeah, so you get 8 points that you can divide between the 4 attributes that I mentioned before. The maximum that any of them can be is 4. And 2 is considered an average statistic. 1 is kind of low, and the only one that's allowed to be 0, again, is adult.
And
any of the others you have to have as 1.
And generally you don't want everyone at the party to be 0 adult. Or you could, but your GM might get a little frustrated. Maybe. Who knows?
It could get pretty annoying, yeah, especially because anytime you have to do literally anything involving using technology or knowing anything about the human world, you have to use feelings every single time, because otherwise you can't succeed at an adult check.
How's this mechanical pencil work? I keep clicking on it, and it's
and a then it pen. Just falls out at the end. You just take the pen apart, and it just falls apart.
So what else do we have to cover for a character creation? Are we about ready to start?
Well, once you've got that, the last part that's listed here is, you know, you've got to pick a name, you've got to pick your forms, like, what do you look like, and especially what does your, you know, human form look like is important. And there's a list of names that pop up on page 40, and there is actually a separation here, and this is kind of important.
Oh, yeah.
Because most Henge have simple names. Foxes, especially very old foxes, can sometimes have older names, more official names. And I am playing a fox that has her own shrine, so
you gotta do something more for your name than just simple.
I have to pick the fancy name, yeah.
I mean, the foxes in this game are basically the, what did it say, the closest to the gods or something like that?
They're the closest to being local gods, and when I say they have a shrine, I mean they have a shrine. Like, my character plays as being a priest in the shrine, but she's actually the object of worship in the shrine. So.
Oh dear.
That's a thing that can happen sometimes. You know, it's also a shrine to one of the local manifestations of Inari, most likely. But there's a reason why they have the offerings for the foxes. And you remember that general store lady I was talking about?
I do.
She appreciates her business. Like, having a shrine has the benefit of you get money. I will cover that in detail when I'm actually running through my character. Do you want me to go through mine first, or do you want to do yours?
Let's go with you first. I think you're going to have a better time setting, you know, the standards we should be hitting for. Right. So, and that's more to make sure that I know what I'm doing. Don't worry, listeners. They don't know what I'm talking about. They can't hear me.
I can. I am playing as Shizuka Murakami. She is, at this point, 235 years old, but that doesn't really come into much when it comes to foxes, because their big thing is longevity. And in a human form, she just looks like a young 20-something shrine priest, and she dresses like a jogger when she's about town off hours. So, like, in, you know, sweats and a skirt. Skirt is used whenever it is warmer weather, full sweats whenever it's getting closer to winter. And let's look at the original powers that you have, because the full descriptions are actually necessary. The big thing with foxes is they are pretty laid back about things, not in a lazy way, like, say, a tanuki is usually seen as lazy, but instead in a not wanting to take initiative and just jump straight into things, wanting to give it a proper think before rushing through. So the abilities that I've chosen make a lot of sense given this. I'll cover the attributes instead of just going straight into the powers. So I picked a henge of 2, animal of 2, adult of 3, and child of 1. This is a fairly good spread in terms of just keeping things balanced. If I'd gone for that 4 on adult, I would have had to sacrifice 1 point on one of my 2s, and that, well, there's a reason why they call it min-maxing. It's not really going to help you much. You want to have things spread out, and having the character have a really good tie on, like, knowledge and being able to understand the human world better, but not being very good at handling stuff that is more on the kid side of things makes a lot of sense for the oldest character in the group and also the one that appears the most like an actual adult. This is pretty close to the way that I set up the spread for the first character I ever made in this, so. Your standard 6 powers as a fox are alluring, which is kind of silly to me, but basically, whenever you create a new connection with an impression check, if the other person is a person, like a human person, or a henge of some kind, and they're not the same gender as you are, then the strength of the connection is increased by 1. I don't know why that specific thing, and I would probably write that out.
Yeah.
But that's just the way they constructed it. It is a free ability, it's just a thing that you have. It doesn't have a wonder cost. Second one is Oracle. So anyone sleeping nearby can have whatever dream you want them to, and they'll think it was their dream. And if your henge attribute is higher than their adult attribute, whenever you do the check, remember the feelings thing you can do. Anytime that that comes up in the writing, it doesn't mean literally the attribute line that you have. It means after you do any feelings addition. You can make them hold back on doing something that they were planning on doing, or go ahead with something that they were holding back on using that dream. But you have to actually describe what the contents of the dream are. And if the dream doesn't make sense to the narrator, the GM of the story, then they can just ignore it. And another 6 wonder cost power is Foxfire, and this creates, well, ball of fire on the tip of your tail or somewhere else convenient. But you can only use this power in twilight or at night, and you can only use it while your tail is out. So you have to actually have your tail popped out. Whenever you do this, you can draw people closer with it, or you can cause them to run away. And the same adult check versus henge check is occurring here. And if they have a higher result on theirs, then they can react however they like. But if you win, you get to decide which way they react. 8 wonder, invisibility. I don't think I need to explain how this one works. You turn invisible. The only way that you can be seen is if they beat you in a henge versus henge check, but the thing is, your ability gets an automatic 3-point boost. So it becomes pretty difficult. In my case, it would be a check against a 5, and I can still boost it. I can still use feelings to boost higher. So invisibility is, you know, a fairly useful thing to use now and then, and it doesn't go away. It's not a thing like, oh, it's invisible until you open a door. No, you're a ghost. You can move stuff around without people being able to see you.
Ooh.
You can float stuff in front of people and scare them. Foxes are really good at, you know, creating fake haunts, or I guess pretty unfake haunts. Speaking of fake, that's the name of the next power, which costs 10 wonder, and it allows you to make anything appear to be something else. You can turn any object into some living or inanimate thing of about the same size. So rather than just transforming yourself, you can transform anything. There are limits, though. If you turn a rock into a person, it can't move. It's still a rock, technically. You just faked it into looking like it's a person. The appearance changes, but the standard abilities of the thing stay the same. So, also, this only lasts until the end of the scene, like most powers, or until you just decide to make it turn off. And the biggest cost ability is Fairy Rain, which costs 12 wonder, and allows you to cause a light rain to fall in the immediate area. It doesn't require any clouds. It can happen at any time. While you're in this rain, or any other Hengi with you are in this rain, they can take human form at no cost at all, and they can use wonder and feelings interchangeably. So instead of being restricted to using wonder for supernatural powers and feelings for boosting your stats, you can use either of them, which normally the only thing you can use them interchangeably for is your transformation ability. And this lasts until the end of the scene. So, you know, fairly costly ability, but could be useful in some cases. Although, Henga don't like getting wet, may be upset by the effect. That isn't written down, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, I have a feeling there's a couple of different Henge types, particularly cats, that wouldn't enjoy getting rained on.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
So, weaknesses and additional powers. So, this is the most archetypal thing. I am actually taking the weakness fried tofu.
There was one that really intrigued me.
What this means is you just really, really love this specific type of fluffy fried tofu that's called abura-age. And I have had it. It is actually quite tasty. I don't know if I would like it quite this much, but this is just a thing that foxes are supposed to be really into in Japan. And when you see abura-age or you smell it, your transformation comes undone. So if you were fully in human form, your tail comes out. If your tail was already out, your ears come out. If both were out, you're no longer in a human-shaped form at all. You just turn back into a fox.
This is more setting up for pranks by the other Henge, by the way.
It's so silly. And it's particularly nice to stick onto a fox because it's like, okay, yeah, this is a typical thing. But also, foxes have this thing of being, like, the most above it all out of the archetypes. So having this weird, goofy thing that can happen is very silly. The ability that you get from that is you get the ability to be really good at lying. With an 8 in wonder, you can make someone believe a lie that you just told them using the same Henge versus adult check that a lot of these have, and if they fail the check, then they're tricked. They'll go on believing your lie and acting accordingly until they find very clear evidence to the contrary. This has a bunch of positive uses that it can be put towards. It also has a bunch of incredibly mischievous uses it can be put towards. I leave that up to your imagination.
Yeah, I've already come up with tons.
Now, part of the reason why this would be very bad for a fox in some cases is right after it. There's one that I'm not taking, which is called Secret. And that means you have a very strict rule of avoiding letting people see your true form. And of course, you know, if you already had your ears and tail out and you encountered that previous weakness, you would just turn into full animal form, which means taking the low route and just not using any excess energy up whenever it's still twilight hours to just transform without having anything that would have your ears and tail out, so you would just stop being in human form. I'm not taking that even though the old friend ability that it comes with is very nice, because it eats your connections so fast if you pop into full fox form in front of anyone. And it's just, it's not good. I don't like it. It could be good for other people, but a lot of the abilities that foxes have this nasty ability of absorbing this stuff. I took a lesser connection eating one, which is Pride, because I really wanted the shrine power that comes with it. Pride has, well, you have a fairly arrogant attitude towards humans and other Hengai in this, and when others want to increase their connection to you as a result, it costs them an extra 2 dreams to do it. Now, we haven't actually covered how dreams work. If you do something that is cool or cute or is solving someone's problem, then anyone in the group can go, oh, that sounds like that, you know, deserves this, and then you can give them a dream. And you can give up to 2 dreams to any one person in a scene, and everyone has the ability to do this, including the narrator. And you use dreams in order to increase your connections, and the cost goes up the further up you go. Whenever you first create a connection, you do it by making an impression with that person, and that involves that check that I mentioned earlier, where you pick a thing you're trying to do, narrator picks an attribute, and then you pump it until you have the result you want. And it gives you a connection of either 1 point or 2, and then dreams are used to pump it higher. So, in this case, I don't have a problem making connections to other people that are outward, that would give me wonder. But getting feelings requires them to have connections to me. And it's a little harder for them to do that because, well, Shizuka's got a little bit of an attitude for having 200 years of just being around and figures everyone should already know her, and is kind of miffed when people act like they don't. Because how could you not? I've been here forever. I've been here for longer than you've been around. Right? She kind of forgets that, you know, sometimes that's not obvious. And the result that you get from that is shrine, which it's free. It doesn't have a wonder cost. What it means is you have a shrine dedicated to you, and you can have up to 10,000 yen of actual money that you get at the beginning of the story.
And let's be clear, that's money.
It's actual money. It's not fake money.
One of the other Hengai has an ability for... It's in the fantasy one. Dragons get a, 50,000 yen? Like, treasure? However, it's an object, so they have to figure out a way to use it or sell it in some way. You're just sitting on money.
Yeah, Tanuki can also make fake money. And technically, there's nothing stopping a fox from making fake money. Like, you can literally just take leaves and make them appear to be yen notes.
Just take a marker to a leaf.
I don't know why you would do this, but you can. Meanwhile, with a shrine, you don't need to, because you've got approximately $100 of actual money every story that you can just use for small purchases or for covering up for the other Hengai deciding to steal stuff.
Wow, wish I had $100. That's
definitely not a thing that happened during my first run. Anyway.
Wish I had $100 every story.
The other special ability this gives you is people won't chase after you or harass you when you're in fox form, though they can still be surprised seeing you where you're not expected. And you can speak to local gods as if you were an equal instead of having to pay them, like, undying respect and bow down to them and all that. Because you have a shrine to you. You are technically on the same footing as a local god in a minor respect, although definitely not in terms of sphere of influence or, like, attribute status. The attributes for local gods are staggeringly high, and Hengai cannot approach them. I'm just going to say that right now. In some cases, it can be as high as, like, I think I saw a 7 on one of their sheets. They're just really powerful. There are a bunch of other abilities I could have taken. I'm not going to go through all of them. Also, it seems I was wrong and there are 6 weaknesses on this sheet instead of 5, whatever. But one I could have taken means that you speak and dress in a way that's either out of touch with the times or really bizarre. And because you stand out so much, you can't hide, and if walking around town in human form, you would draw everyone's attention. And the ability that that gives you is the ability to float. For 4 wonder, you would be able to float through the sky at a leisurely pace, and you can move at the same speed a person could walk. And it gives you some bonuses because you're seeing things from a high angle. But as cute as that is, as big a concept as that is, it is being really weird and out of place does not fit with the character type I was creating. And, well, like I said, jogger suit. I'm going for the mom angle again. It would be kind of difficult if I was simultaneously looking like I just walked out of a freaking Sengoku era play. So, yeah. All I took was fried tofu and pride weaknesses for the ability to be really good at lying for the good of other people. And having access to a shrine with all the benefits that that has, including actual real money that can be paid for things.
Well, sometimes you have to give up the greater powers in order to get what you want. In this case, you made Mom Fox. What is it with you and foxes, anyway? It's a mystery we'll never know.
You know, it is what it is.
I'll never know.
So, that's it for my character for now, because the only things that are left on the sheet are connections. And I think I'm going to need to have someone else to connect to first.
Yeah.
That's where'd your cue, you
huh?
What's your cue, hon?
Me? What? Oh, I'm playing too. Yes, hello. I'll be playing the cat. Her name is Tora. Tora is Japanese for tiger, so you can probably guess how I got this name.
Sad, yeah. Expecting your cat to start yelling at the mic right there.
No, he's sleeping. I'm not gonna wake him up.
Please don't.
He's actually looking he's looking very cute right now. But just like my own little kitty, Tara has like nice jet black hair. It's fairly long. I'm probably not as long as mine, but you know. She has baggy shorts and tights on. She has, you know, your typical tennis shoes on, and she has a sweatshirt on, so she likes to live in the slightly cooler weather, all that. And her cat form is, of course, a black cat. Because you gotta be a black cat. Also, I just realized, one of the things about the cat is that technically, like, the dog and the cat, maybe a rabbit, they can be kept as pets. There's actual little bits about, hey, if you want to have your backstory about you're somebody's pet. Oh, the fish also, I just realized that.
Yep. Cats have that, dogs have that, fish have that. Ponies probably have that, but ponies are kind of a weird thing to have
space. I don't know if ponies, especially in a Japanese town, like, it might be, like, even here, you know, South Dakota, I don't really see many horses in town.
They're more of a rich person thing around here.
Yeah, they're more here, they're more for the ranches. But anyway, hello, yes, I'm playing the cat. I already said that. Let's go over the cat powers real quick. We have Kitty. You are an ordinary cat, the kind people see everywhere. So, basically, when I'm in animal form, I will not surprise people. Or they will not find my presence strange at all. Because that's what cats do. They're just around. You're like, oh, it's a cat. Wait, oh, I forgot to mention. Tara is a, she doesn't have, like, a pet keeper or anything, but she lives in the alleyway between two houses and, you know, both the people there are like, oh, it's the alley cat, and they, you know, they provide some food and shelter.
Yes.
Pretty much the best
kind of. And she helps keep the houses, you know, relatively clean of mice and such.
Yeah. And then for next power, we got Fuzzy. By taking a friendly attitude and probably against someone, you can remove the fetters of a person's heart, which means when you stay close to someone during a scene, their adult attribute drops to zero.
Yup.
That's...
And remember all those powers that I have access to that require trying to combat them using the adult stat?
Yeah, boy. And I think this is why this game works perfectly well with just two Hengay.
Yep. That actually, is an option.
Yeah.
It makes you have a very strong connection from the start.
And then next up, we have
stronger.
We have Peek into Hearts. You can read the hearts of another. This lets you hear what someone is saying in their head, not what they're feeling or what's true. Still, it lets you find out what someone's real intentions are from their heart rather than their mouth. Then we got Stealthy Feet, because that's what a cat does, they prowl. You move around, leaving no trace or making a sound. No one in the scene well knows your presence at all. No check is possible. There is no condition on this.
Well you have to spend 8 wonder to do it.
But, well, that. Yeah. But, and then, unless you speak or do something that will overtly make noise, this effect will continue until the end of the scene.
Yep, so until you do the thing where you, you know, are a cat, oh, it's just a cat, sort of thing.
Or you can just not be there at all, because if someone doesn't even want a cat there, then you're like, no, I'm just not there at all. Next up, we got cat paths. You can use paths that only cats can see to appear and disappear unexpectedly. Let me reread that. You can use paths that only the cats can see in order to appear and disappear unexpectedly. That's what I meant to parse from that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, this lets you enter or leave a scene when and where you want, regardless of whether it's already in progress. This even works if you're doing something different than another scene taking place at the same time. You can just say, screw this, I am in a different scene right now.
It's a very cat-like thing to do, so...
It costs 10, though, so...
Yeah, but you can build it up. Like, that's another thing about those meters I was mentioning. Wonder and feelings are separate, but... They don't empty until the end of the entire story, so each scene you get a recharge on them, and it builds up because you've got higher connections, if you've been playing your cards right and working with people to build those connections. But your Unless final power costs even more.
14. It's called Friends. I can call other cats to help out. It is equal to the sum of my Hengay and animal times 2 until the end of the scene. However, I cannot use my kitty power when that is active.
Mm-hmm. Too many cats. It's kind of weird.
Yep. If you're not doing not doing a good job at hiding.
Probably surprise people. So, question for you, because I don't think I heard it. What are the attributes you picked?
Oh, right. My attributes. I went with 2 animal, 2 Hengay. 3 child, 1 adult.
So sort of the flip of what I did with my spread.
I went with a more slightly childish, like...
Mm-hmm.
My main thing is that I also... The reason I went with 3 child is also because a high child helps you, you know, get protection and stuff from people. And when you have an endearing character like a cat, you can build up those connections with other people and be like, oh no! This person is being mean to me, and then you can get the entire town to help you.
Mm-hmm. It's also really good for making connections that are tied to that. Where...
And that brings me into my weakness in power addition.
Oh boy.
My weakness is cat tongue, so there's a lot of things that you actually cannot eat. You can't have temperature-wise hot things like citrus fruit. Citrus fruits. Then there's squid or raw onions, and there's probably other things, and as a cat owner, I can tell you that's probably the smallest.
Yeah, speaking of,
but if you eat
do not
those...
let your cats have onions, period, because they are literally toxic.
Yep. I love onions myself, but yeah.
Yeah, But I have to keep them away from the kitty.
Oh, yeah. So if you eat any of that stuff by mistake, you're automatically affected by a level 7 surprise.
Which means you faint.
Oh, no!
I think there's a way to mitigate surprise, but I haven't, like, looked deeply at it. I think it's basically just having a high enough adult to overcome the surprise. But usually what it means is you faint.
Oh, dear. But this comes at the power at just 4. Feigned innocence. This lets you hide your true character and put on an excellent act to declare that you're using this power before you make this check. When you use it, you can use whatever attribute you like for a check rather than the one designated by the narrator or the rules.
So for 4 wonder, you can just go, oh yeah, this is a child check. I get my 3.
But this is a machine. You need a dog. No, I'm using my child.
It's fine. I will just play with it. I'll just bat at it until it does what I want it to.
It's great. Don't worry about it. It's called cat luck, I think. Lucky cat.
Did you take another one?
That's actually something I want to ask you. What other ones do would be a good one? Because I'm not sure if acrobatics, which lets you pull off nearly impossible athletics. Oh, actually, no, I can't pull that off. That's only a 2 animal. I only got a 2 animal, and that's an animal check.
I mean, it's an animal check, but remember again, if you use feelings, you can boost animal. She was still pretty good.
Yeah. I suppose that's true. It comes at the cost of can't swim, where...
Yeah, which gives you another surprise boost.
Another level 7 surprise?
Yep. If you enter a bathtub, pool, or a large body of water, you're automatically affected by a level 7 surprise, because you're one of those cats who can't swim and hates water. Remember that bit about rain I said before?
Yep, that's why I was like,
Not sure if we want that one.
Also, kind of opposite of me again. Like, first you throw onions, and now, like, I'm a really good swimmer, actually, so...
Yeah, I'm not actually sure what else you would take, The lazy and sleeping soundly pair really sounds like the choice for people who don't want to play the game or who are absent a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of... I mean, it's a really neat ability. Sleeping soundly lets you... You just don't do anything for an entire scene, and you automatically get 10 points of dreams.
However, honestly, out of the set that I'm seeing here, one of the best ones for a playful character... if you're not taking acrobatics, it would probably be skittish.
Yeah,
I think which gives you cat burglar, which lets you steal something. Anything that a cat could reasonably grab and run off with, which is a surprisingly large amount of things.
Yeah.
You can even steal something they're currently wearing.
You can steal articles of clothing. But yeah, skittish is, recently something smaller than yourself. Or something you don't really understand. You'll go after it. And yet, when its movements or reactions turn out to be something unexpected, you'll be surprised. Oh, this is actually a good one. Make a child check.
Yep. Actually, the narrator sets the required number, and if you succeed at it, then you don't suffer any consequences.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take Skittish and Cat Burglar then. What is it cat with being characters that keep stealing?
Cat Burglar costs 8 wonder, but... It's useful. Sometimes, I guess.
There's no check to steal. You just take it.
No, you just take it. You spent the 8 wonder. Take it.
Oh, there's so many shenanigans to pull off. And with that, you mentioned connections.
Yep. So, Shizuka's connection... I have to actually pick a type for the connection. Because there's only 2 of us,
we
both have a 2-point connection to each other. And I'm also not clear on the rules whether that continues until there are more than 3. Because it said if there are 2 other henge, I think. But it's kind of ambiguous. But anyway, we both have a 2-point connection to each other, which is the same as the connection that we have to the town initially. And I am trying to find the information on those. Okay, the contents of connections is on page 55.
I will point out that one of the connection contents is like. However, it says, note, the strength for this kind of connection can only go as high as 2. If you want to raise it to 3 or higher, you'll have to change its contents.
Yep, which you can do at the same time as you raise a connection, or you can technically do it basically at any time. You can have someone who, one story you have a close affection for, and then you temporarily swap it to rivalry because they did something that you didn't like. It still means you have a connection. It still means you're still, you know, working alongside each other, but you might be working against each other in occasion. I'm going to pick affection for the town because I like the town and I like the people of the town, but I am not in a position of, like, heavily protecting them so much as just helping them out a bunch. And let's see.
I'm going to take acceptance for my town connection, because I am just a vain fucker with that.
You can't.
Yes, I can. This
you
is only
actually,
for...
You actually can't. Acceptance is only allowed for the town and local gods.
That's
what
I said.
You have to have the narrator's permission to select it.
Well, I'm asking the narrator, and, I'm the host of this podcast. I say that's good. Actually, you're right. I should choose something that's, you know, it's up to the GM, and let's go with something that's, you know, less restricted. So let's go with, I want to do admiration. I think this town has a lot of fine folk that are, you know, want to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be like those nice people, too.
Sounds cool. Okay, so what about Shizuka and Tora? You both have a 2-point connection to each other, automatically, but what is it shaped like? Like, how did these two meet? Shizuka would be around town a fair bit, but how did they end up, you know, encountering each other? Maybe she ran into Tora while out on a jog?
She probably tripped over a Tora.
Oh no!
I mean, that's what cats do. Right? They get under foot.
Well, knowing Shizuka, she probably ended up having that almost happen and then sort of leapt over the cat and then landed on the other side, turned around, went, oh, hello.
Tora would just say, that's a mighty fine jump you just did. And I realized that they were going to be tripped over.
So you don't even try to hide. That's fine.
I mean, there's probably some... Oh, no, you know what? I bet Tora already knew that you were a henge.
I mean, she's been around a fair bit. She's probably shown up with tail when just kind of letting things head down for a bit. If Tora's been by the general store at all... then they've probably seen each other in some form or another, but haven't really talked for much.
Oh, she's definitely been to the general store in all, and probably both animal and human form.
Yep. Once they've gotten to, you know, connect, you can pick what you want. Like, I'm gonna go probably with... you're not quite at the level of family. I don't think that they like each other that. I don't think they're that close. But, you know,
are
I'm going to go
take
with protection.
That? Okay. I guess I know what you're looking at.
I'm going to go with protection, because that seems to fit Shizuka connecting to any other henge and having a connection other than, okay, I trust you, but I'm not going to bother with you too much. And if you're going to have a story together, it makes more sense to have a little stronger of a connection than that.
Well,
what's yours?
I'm going to go with affection. Yeah, I don't think we had many henge in this town, in our story, so maybe someone else that's alike.
There's usually implied to be less than a dozen, so...
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, having someone nearby and hanging out with a lot.
And that gives them an excuse to be together more often, and thus have stories that they can have together. Go ahead.
And we just ruined the town with our tricks.
So the last bit that turns up is I am going to mention this because it's part of how you move forward. Advancement in this game is entirely in terms of your connections. But it's weird because the way that your connections tie in is through threads and memories. After a story completes, every single connection that you have that isn't to the town, including to other Hange, becomes memories. So you add up all the numbers that you have on those connections, which they should have built up a fair bit because you've been, you know, enjoying each other's company and solving each other's problems. A lot of dreams get exchanged. Then memories basically are this extra pool that you have access to, that you can turn into wonder or feelings in future stories. Now, the trouble is, when I say turn into, it's like you count up how much you've gotten memories, and then you turn all of your connections except the one to the town into threads. So similar to how your connections are either from you, how you feel about others, versus how others feel about you, and those are different pools, threads also do this. Any of your connections that you have to others become threads that are a single thread, unless you have a 5-point connection, which is the highest you can possibly have, in which case it becomes 2 threads. And these you hold on to, and they don't affect anything directly, except if you're in the story that comes up next, and that character comes up again, you can make another impression with them and meet up with this, with that old friend, and those threads then turn into extra points to make a stronger connection to begin with. So you can only maintain a 5-point connection for one story, but the next time around, your ability to get back up there is faster.
I feel like this is a way to help encourage, like, branching out stories. Like,
it's branching off of stories, and it's being able to have people who are coming in, and maybe someone can't make it that week, or maybe you have a different group of friends who are coming in, and you quickly make a new character for someone, and then you have someone who's never been in with this group before, and now they can join in too.
Or you know what? Maybe it's just, you know, a good way to branch off and do one-shots instead, so you're making new characters. You're not, like, losing much at all, then. It's a small bonus to keep telling the same characters, but, you know, if you want to do something new, then nothing's stopping you.
And it's a lightweight and lighthearted enough adventure that follows, and you can have those characters constantly moving in and out. So now we have 2 complete characters, and they should be fairly close together after their first story. And then you can do stuff like, oh, I don't know, help out some kid who's having trouble adjusting to moving in, or find out what's up with that one weird house.
Tell me your secrets, house.
The house that's supposedly haunted. There's a bunch of standard stories that you can have in this area, and there's a bunch of examples that are given. We're not going to get into those right now, but I've played a couple of them. And, well, it's a game that I wish I had more time to play, because it's so easy to pick up and start up. But maybe that's for another time, maybe with these characters. I like it a lot more than what I remember of the other game that this particular group made. But,
yeah, let's not talk about that.
It's a newer game, and it shows advancement. It shows a movement forward in this stuff.
It's a very good game, too.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very good outflow from Ryutama to this, because it has that same sort of heartwarming feel.
Yeah, Ryutama does have potential to be very dark, is the thing. Well, you know, you can have some drama. Even says reward drama in Golden Sky Stories, but the entire point of this game is you want to come out feeling very good. Everyone, it's definitely a game you do not want a GM that's, like, actively trying to hurt you.
You can
then again tell... you don't want any GM like that. Fuck that stereotype. I hate that.
don't do adversarial GMing, please.
No.
It's bad. So yeah. You can tell stories that have a lot of, like, weight to them like that in terms of maybe having darker themes, but the end result is you have to have something that makes things better. Or otherwise, well, you're not getting much of a bright sky, are you?
It's...
So...
This is just a good way of expanding tabletop to, like, show just what you can play. It's more than just your swords and sorcery. In a long quest sort of thing. This is a good one-shot. It's a good feel-good game.
It still has good continuation, even though it's not so reliant on sticking with the same core group.
I feel like this is probably the perfect addition to Adventure Buds. Just, yeah, covering all these feel-good games on a wide range.
And ones that you won't normally see because, again, diceless game? How does that work? And it turns out it actually works really well.
Please listen rare. To Diceless Games. 6 Feet Under obviously has Golden Sky Stories, actually, with Alan Clooney. He was the one that actually translated this.
I believe that is the girl in the old house was the story, which is also one that I played with a different group. That was not recorded, so... don't look for it. And it took a very different route, but it ends up in a still a very good place.
And also other Diceless games to check out. Final Bid, obviously.
And its predecessor, Law's Out.
Oh yeah, check that out too. I don't know, I'm kind of have some feelings about the older games, but
I'm going to make a suggestion of one that maybe we can do at some point. Although it's kind of weird to think of, hey, let's create characters in this thing where the characters are partly morphed by the actual act of playing the game. But are you familiar with Kingdom?
I have not even heard of this, actually.
So Kingdom is about creating a community in the space, and you have, like, it could be a town, or it could be a literal kingdom, or it could be a country, or it could be a bunch of kids in an orbital mech academy that just declared independence after mutinying a very dangerous captain. That's actually the thing that set off the game that I played of this. And in each of these different cases, you have characters. The characters have wants and needs. They have beliefs as to where things are going to go, and they have things that they're very worried may happen. And you have the ability to, through a set of mostly freeform decision-making, decide where things go. And how people feel about that. Not only the group that you have there, but people who aren't represented by those characters. Might be worth looking into at some point.
Yeah. You definitely give a check. And one more 6 Feet Under thing. 6 Feet Under the bonus feature for Law's Out. I actually will put a link directly to this in the episode description, because this is going to be the first episode that's released on Podbean when I make the subscription, so I can have more space to describe stuff. But like I was saying, I'm going to link to the Law's Out chat, which specifically talks about diceless games, which includes Mollifal and Nobilis. So,
honestly, kind of surprised they didn't include Microscope.
I don't think they knew about Microscope. Oh, but that is a good one to talk about too. So,
yep. I think it's made by the same designers as Kingdom, but I mentioned Kingdom because it's easier to understand.
I have tried to listen to Microscope, but I have completely lost. Then again, they went in saying they're going to connect all of the Feats multiverse, and they ended up not.
Nope. Time paradox. But anyway.
And that was made before Fellowship, and we don't know if Fellowship is the beginning or the end of the Feats multiverse.
So, yes. Welcome to the wonderful world of what is possible when you move outside of dice. There are options for things that are much darker and grittier if you are into them. Kingdom is a good example of one that covers that. The entirety of Final Bids options pretty much slide into that. But,
yeah.
If you want a cute game?
Don't worry about, you know, there's a growing brand of, you know, if you want a darker game that's diceless, you know, get it covered.
You want a cute game? You wanna have a big fluffy tail that you only sometimes show? Hey, come over here.
Yeah, I think we covered quite a bit about that anyway.
Anyway,
so what game are we gonna cover next? Because I like this part especially about our show. We're just talking about what game we want to cover next.
I honestly do think that that Kingdom might be a good option, but considering our track record of figuring out what we're going to do next,
I mean,
the one thing I can say for certain is it's probably not going to be anything that uses a d20.
Yeah.
We seem to have a curse regarding d20 games.
Yeah, so did we talk about this last time about canning the 13th stage episode, especially in the wake of...
I think it was still in progress at the time.
I said wake. Oh.
I think it was still in the progress at that point, and we weren't sure if we were going to not do it or not, but...
I mean...
Yeah, the long story short, and we're not going to get into tight reasons, we're probably not going to do the 13th Age for some indeterminate amount of time, because, well, first off, it turned out to be a lot more complicated than we thought, and we ended up with too much stuff.
We had like 3.5 hours over 2 episodes, and it's excessive.
It's excessive, and it's really hard to cut down to an hour, I say, as we hit the...
I mean, we're talking more about just... Don't worry about this one. I think we did good. Plus, we're going to cut out a good bit, so don't worry.
We're cutting a lot of the stuff out on you.
I'm an editor.
I keep talking about editing. Why do I keep talking about editing? You told me not to talk about it.
Well, I'm the one that talked about editing. I'm keeping this all in. I love you, dear. Yes.
I love you, too. But yes, the concern... I don't know. If we do a D20 game at any point in the near future, it's probably going to end up being the new Pathfinder at this point, because I'm kind of surprised at how... not shaped like the editions I don't like of the game we shall not mention that it is.
Oh, you're talking about second edition Pathfinder? The one that's a little...
How second edition Pathfinder feels a lot more 4th-y. Oh. I like 4th-y.
Okay, yeah, that's... You know, I heard about that, so that's kind of bending our rules about the mainstream, but you know what? If it's like 4th edition, why not?
We can take a look. It's not going to be our next.
No.
For one, I don't think it's technically out yet. But it's worth a look.
Yeah, I think they were still working on Starfinder. Well, maybe.
Iffy on that game.
You can see how much we're following it when I say it might be Starfinder, when I'm pretty sure Starfinder's progress has been like 4 years now. When I last heard about it. But, I talked about the other games. The one thing I was talking about before that we might want to do next. It's going into the Burning Wheel system and Torchbearer. I actually saw a few bit more of that being like, I know at least one game was brought up in the 6 Feet Under Discord. Someone wanted to run a campaign, wanted to.
Hmm.
So yeah, maybe that can be a cross thing with Mouse Guard too. We'll see. I want to do Torchbearer for first, maybe a second episode with Mouse Guard. And we talk about the Burning Wheel system.
Burning Wheel has, well, it's its own mixed bag, but it's pretty good. It's fairly snappy. It has a lot of lovely little meters and tokens.
If we want to talk about the actual game system, Burning Wheel,
I'm referring to the core engine.
Okay.
Like, I've never seen the game itself in its core. I've seen Mouse Guard in action. I've heard about Torchbearer.
I'm actually going to probably order Torchbearer this week.
Okay. And that is a pile of D6s game. So.
Yeah. If you love Yahtzee, you will love Burning Wheel System. Oh, you gotta roll 10d6 for this? Not a problem!
Well, we've got options. We've got enough options that it's going to leave surprise open.
So actually, I think maybe, we're also... And, yeah, if you have any suggestions, feel free to, leave us a message on EpiZone Patreon, or just message us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to hear about more games. So anyway, who are you?
I am Aubrey.
I'm Riley. And I don't think we introduced ourselves at the beginning of this episode.
No.
Oh, well.
And if you need us to edit that in, just let me know.
I am not going to do that.
All right. This has been Adventure Buds. See you next time.